This is Robin Gale, coordinator of DARU, the Disability Advocacy Resource Unit. This is session 4 of the Advocacy Sector Conversations Forum held on Tuesday the 22nd of October 2013 at the Queen Victoria Women's Centre. This is session 4, Q&A with the Office for Disability. I'm now going to hand the microphone over to the Office for Disability. We have at the table Michael Cromie, who's the Acting Manager for the Office for Disability, and Felix Neighbour, and I always forget your title, Felix. You know, fabulous all-round guy.
Felix is fine, and what you just said, yeah. and make sure that's on record, right? It's all being recorded, so...
Yeah, and just to remind everybody, this session is being recorded, so you do, so you have heard it here first. If you do have a question or a comment, please do raise your hand, get a microphone to you before you do ask that question. This is very much an open question and answer of the Office for Disability, but before we do hand things over to you in terms of questions, Felix would just like to talk to us a little bit about a couple of matters, and I'll just hand directly over to you, Felix. Or Michael, who's...
I'll talk as Felix is a bit full of himself after that opening, so I'll throw myself straight at the mercy of the group. So thank you. Thanks, Robin. Thanks for having us here today. Before I start, I'd just like to acknowledge... how saddened the Office for Disability were to hear of the tragic passing of Leslie Hall. Everyone knows the role that Leslie Hall played in the sector, and Anthony, if you could pass on our deepest sympathy as well to Frank Hall-Bentick as well. Very, very tragic, but an incredible amount of work that was done by Leslie, and we'll certainly never forget it from the Office for Disability. I just thought I'd quickly talk about a couple of things that we're up to at the moment, and then, as Robin said, open it up to yourselves to ask any questions you wish. One of the things I did want to address was data collection, and data collection is seen as a very dry and boring topic. We're very excited by it in the department, and we'd like to think that other people are getting excited about it too. Now, in all reality, we've known for some time through the sector itself, one of the big gaps that has been in place is that the sector constantly reports to the department, whether it be state government or federal, receives no feedback on that reporting, so doesn't get a sense of what is happening in the broader sector. We've sent out expressions of interest to the Victorian-funded advocacy organisation, so apologies to those who are not providing services at a state level, of up to $3,000 to improve data management. And again, this was a commitment that we made. It seems like it's been a really, really long time coming, I think a couple of years ago actually, but to improve your capacity to collect data that will then come into us, and then we'll be able to provide back in a format that actually works for you as a sector. So we've now collated a full year of advocacy data from 2012-13, and have provided that data through to DARU and through to Disability Advocacy Victoria, the purpose of which will be able to provide reporting back to the sector. And really, if you think about the systemic issues that you face, it'll give you a much broader, much better understanding of whether the things that you're seeing within your organisation are being seen more broadly, and hopefully help in a number of ways around, you know, potentially submission writing and other possible values, I guess, that data has.
Just to chip in to, I don't need to remind people, but Wendy from the Human Rights Commission was talking about the data they collect and how that informs the systemic work of the advocacy sector. So obviously what we provide can work alongside what the Human Rights Commission provide. And I would imagine that we would make those links with the Human Rights Commission when it's at that point to sort of report back to inform some of their work as well.
Yeah, great. And the only other thing I just wanted to briefly mention before opening it up to yourself is the State Disability Plan is a four-year document, 2013 to 2016, and is separated into two implementation plans, 2013-14 and 15-16. At the moment, we're about a year into the state disability plan, and we'll be consulting again with the sector and people with the disabilities, families and carers over the next 6 to 8 months in the development of the next implementation plan, which will be the 15-16 one. As part of that, we'll send out a questionnaire, and obviously we'll send you a lot of information about this so you're able to distribute it as widely as possible as well. So we want a lot of feedback. A questionnaire to find out more about what the experiences are of people with disability and their families. So I assume from here you've probably got a bunch of questions you want to ask? One right up front.
Hi. I've never heard of you. Could you actually explain who you are, please? I'm just a dumb parent, an ignorant parent. I've never honestly heard of you or what you do. And have you got a website? Because I'll be hopping on yours as well.
Sorry, I should have introduced myself at the start. No. As in myself and where we sit. I'm Michael Cromie from the Office for Disability, Acting Manager there. And the Office for Disability works within the state government under Department of Human Services and has a responsibility around trying to push whole of government responses to people with a disability. And what I mean when I say that is we work with areas like transport, areas like health, trying to improve the way they work with people with a disability. So we're interested in people with a disability receiving services, most definitely, and we're also interested in people who don't receive services but have a disability and have been marginalised by the way society sets and structures itself. So the Office for Disability performs that role and sits within Department of Human Services. And I can tell you a bit more about myself. It's being recorded, actually. I might leave that bit out. Yeah. The State Plan, Disability Plan is on the website. It has its own links. It has a companion document which has a whole range of statistics and information about...
Are you under the DHS website?
Yes,
so there'll
we
be
are.
A link to that. Okay,
yes. Thanks. We can send out through the minutes, Robin, copies of both our website link and to the State Disability Plan, if that's...
That's great. Yep, yeah. I love that.
How are you, Susan?
Good, Michael. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Just wondering, I know you guys are only state level, but... Colin Hisco was just reminding me that we got Liberal, I think it is, in again.
Yes.
And he was thinking back to when Jeff Kennett was involved and defunded self-advocacy quite a lot. Now, we're worrying now, what's the chances of federal government, or don't you know, but what would the chances be of federal government removing... the little bit we got left?
It's a good question. It's not one, I guess, I'm able to answer from the federal perspective. I mean, we know, I think, that Mitch Fifield, who has the portfolio federally, has a really strong focus on disability, and you would like to think that that extends to self-advocacy and advocacy. Don't know a lot about that, but can certainly say from a state level that there's been no... sense that there's any, because obviously Jeff Kennett was state level, and those reductions happened quite soon within that Liberal government. There's been no shift at the moment that we can see that suggests that advocacy and self-advocacy is going to be any less valued, certainly at a state level and hopefully at a federal level as well. Just at a state level quickly as well, we've got through the State Disability Plan, we've certainly written in a really strong role for advocacy within that, and that was something that was supported through the Liberal government in Victoria. So that sends a bit of a message, I think, that they're still viewed as great value in advocacy and self-advocacy here in Victoria. But, you know, and the Parliamentary Secretary is speaking, I think, at the SARU...
Andrea Kidd is opening the Self-Advocacy Matters Forum on the 19th of November. So that's another, I guess, demonstration of the commitment.
And
so.
An opportunity, too, to grill her. I'm sure she'll be up for that if you want to ask her a bit more about what she thinks is going to happen federally as well.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Susan.
Hi, I've got another question. Do you have jurisdiction in schools? Do you take data from schools? Education? As in education?
We get the data through the education department, which is fed into the companion document of the state plan, yeah. So we don't have jurisdiction over them as such. We separate departments, but we certainly have actions that Department of Education, DEECD, have committed to do. Did you want to say something? I can feel you looming.
I'm burning a hole in you. No, I'm just saying that the companion document that Michael's referring to is actually a good segue to what we discussed earlier in the day, because the companion document contains an overview of some of the statistics, some of the barriers, some of the legislation, some of the policies that relate to the state plan, and as well as the state plan, could provide potential tools for advocacy. So I just wanted to sort of chip in about what that is.
Absolutely, yeah. Was there another question in regards to schools?
Lots of questions in regards to schools, but obviously it's probably not your department.
And sorry, what was your name?
Ruth. I'm Ruth.
Ruth. So what we want through the state plan is that all departments have contributed actions to the state disability plan, and that was the first time that's happened in the state. You know, usually it just used to be like a department document, and it was about services. Now we've got all state government departments having signed up to actions, and that includes Department of Education, and you can see what actions they've signed up to online, and you can hold them to that. That's part of the value of it, is that you can say to them, but you've said in the state plan, Susan it does this really well. You know, the things that you do and don't do and don't commit to are important to refer back to. It's definitely worth it. Christian?
I would like to talk about the NDIS, and specifically in regard to the trial site in Geelong and in the Barwon region. Well, I'm since it started on the 1st of July, as we all know, apparently the take-up of the NDIS has been quite low compared to the number of people who are eligible for the NDIS. And another interesting information that I've got is the fact that a lot of people who are receiving the NDIS, their life has not changed, has not improved. So my question will be, is the office doing anything about those issues?
We've heard some of the same things, Christian. We've heard certainly that there's been a lot of teething issues with the rollout of the NDIS, and things have moved a lot more slowly than what the agency would have hoped, and obviously us in the state, what we would have hoped. In terms of what we're doing about it, another part of DHS is actually has responsibility from the DHS perspective for the NDIS, not the rollout, because obviously that's a federal issue, but what it has responsibility for are putting forward Victoria's position in regards to the issues of the rollout. So, you know, if we have a problem with any aspects of the way they're determining eligibility, for example, in this state, then that will come through that part of DHS that will say, we've got problems with this, this doesn't work for us, it's not applying. Because what we've kind of been, I think, the point where we haven't been willing to negotiate, as I understand, I haven't been intimately involved with it, is that any of the standards that existed in the state would be lowered. You know, so existing standards around safeguarding individuals' rights, those sorts of things, that had to be the absolute bare minimum. And if they were suggesting in a federal scheme that any of those things would be reduced, then we would not sign up to those components of it. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying, you know, that whilst not being directly responsible for it, we do know that there's a whole range of things that the state government is continuing to feed back about the rollout, happy or not, And that'll continue over the life until the 2019 full scheme. And we're hearing some rumblings too about, you know, the definitely around the pace of take-up, you know, and the ability that the agency had of actually rolling this out, which was a massive, massive scheme, and all the logistics that come with that, including locating the actual agency down in Geelong. I don't know, Carol, you might have some other sort of perspectives on this. It's just an incredibly enormous undertaking, and, you know, workforce and all those issues, because you're setting up the agency as well as actually this scheme, is probably part of the stuff that yeah, Carol would know more about than I do.
But I think, I mean, also by looking at the signals that we are getting so far, it seems that there is no mass empowerment of people with a disability to take up the new scheme and to make the most of it to improve their quality of life.
Can I
step in and sorry, interrupt you, Michael. There is on the topic of empowering people within the Barwon region, people with a disability to take up the National Disability Insurance Scheme. The NAPFINE government has actually given some funding to the Committee for Geelong to actually deliver some training and some sessions on leadership and advocacy for people with a disability who have currently who are currently going through the National Disability Insurance Scheme process within the Barwon region. So there is something happening at a Barwon region level. I'm not sure any other region.
And the only other thing to remember, I guess, is that it's being a pilot. We've got to iron some of this stuff out. You know, that's what a pilot's about. It was never going to be flash up front, but it's important all that feedback is given, and what you're hearing and experiencing as advocates needs to be feedback that's provided to the agency, because the pilot is there to iron out those things that have been problematic, I guess, including, most importantly, people with a disability not getting their lives improved or not having their lives improved through the experience.
Michael, can I add to that?
Yeah,
I was really curious about the speed of intake on the NDIS. Yeah. And if you go onto their site, they've got the numbers that they will take in every month over the next 2 years. The direction they're running at the moment seems to be taking in people with existing service provision in some way.
Yeah.
But they're only taking, according to their website, 4 new clients a month. So it's going to be a very slow process. And that data is on their site.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's useful. And we can also, because, as I said, there's another part of the department that works with the NDIS, we can get some feedback on those issues and provide it as well through the minutes, Robin, if that's okay. So.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. Well, just on that NDIS issue on the Daru website, actually one of the events coming up on Thursday, I believe, is a session around what should the data collection requirements be. There's a group out of Deakin who are looking at that. That's this Thursday. So check out the Daru site. Not that I'm an advocate directly for Daru, but my bill's in the mail. I wonder if the Office of Disability, could you outline some of your involvement in the National Disability Strategy as we head towards the third or fourth year that it's actually been in place? I know there's been a lot of traffic about the NDIS, and it's actually sucked the oxygen out of the development of the the National Disability Strategy. This is where I think the rubber sort of hits the road in the communities about creating livable cities and communities and environments for everyone. And I wonder if the office has got some expectations or hopes or aspirations around the NDIS as we head out towards its 10-year life cycle.
That's a great question. Sorry, what was your name?
David. Sorry.
David. Yeah, look, it's been something that obviously, because of the role of the Office for Disability, it's been firmly on our agenda. And a great description, I think, that the NDIS has probably sucked the oxygen out of the NDIS. Just at a structural level, the State Disability Plan is essentially Victoria's implementation of the National Disability Strategy. Many of the expected outcomes marry up, and the way we're going to go about it, many of them marry up as well. It's about putting the Victorian nuance, I guess, into that, and having that whole of government thing that I mentioned before, having all departments sign up to it has been really important. Element of that.
I suppose it was just relating to the NDS actually goes for 10 years, yeah. And the plan, of course, is for part of that. So this is part of the,
yep.
You know, the continual sort of improvement, hopefully, as we go towards 2020.
We'll always have a state disability plan from now on. It's now legislated. So from the end of this plan, which lasts to the end of 2016, we'll be going for a 2017 to 2020 state disability plan, and again, the strategies we would like to think would have, would resonate pretty strongly with what's been done federally as well, and very deliberately, you know, we think that people have told enough about their stories and are probably sick of being consulted on those things because they've told it over and over again federally and within the state, and we wanted to make that the way we do the things that they've already told us they want done in the state. I have really high hopes that the mainstream and the whole of society and community approach will return to the front centre of the agenda. I think that'll be quickly realised when the NDIS is not realised to be the panacea that people hoped it would be. And I don't want to dampen people's enthusiasm for it because it's a wonderful thing, but there's a lot of people that still miss out, and there's a lot of things that don't get covered by the NDIS. So the NDIS is critically important to that, and the role of the office, I think, remains important to that. I think we view that as being, and we've been told that we remain as part of that. What Victoria will still contribute is, you know, the commitment to improving mainstream.
Can I just chip in to say, obviously, the role of advocacy is fundamentally important because we collect this data through the quarterly data collection, and we often rely on advocacy organisations who are working with people with a disability on the ground to tell us what the issues are. And it's really encouraging. We're already seeing some. It's encouraging in that we're getting information back. It's concerning what the examples are, but we're getting information back about issues with the NDIS. We've been getting information about mainstream areas in relation to the state plan and the NDS. So I just encourage organisations to keep providing that information back, and then what we can do is talk to the relevant people within government, whether it's policy and strategy within DHS about the NDIS or whether that's education or transport. So keep feeding that back. It's really useful and we'll be making better use of it. So, yeah.
That's a good point.
We're just about out of time, so those people who currently have their hands up are our final question askers. Next question.
It's Karen from Vision Australia. So I just wanted to, hoping you could elaborate a little bit more on the whole of government approach. In particular, I understand that other state government departments have actions within your plan, but what about embedding accessibility and inclusion in departmental plans and strategies? I wonder what influence you have in that sphere and whether it's that kind of two-way relationship or whether it's just other departments feeding into the state disability plan?
It's kind of a combination, I suppose. Departments are also required long before the development of the state disability plan to do disability action planning, and that, again, is legislated. So each department is required to have disability action plan to explain how they'll remove barriers in a whole range of areas to people with a disability. So all those should be available, publicly available, and people should be able to view those and say, similarly to what we said about the state disability plan, hold departments to account on what they are suggesting they'll do through the actions in that. So there's that. There's the state disability plan actions, and long before the state disability plan came into focus, a number of those departments had already launched a whole range of their own strategies that do feed into the state disability plan. But we're there anyway. So there's what departments have already committed to, there's what they've added to do through the state disability plan, and what they've committed to do through disability action planning as well. And all of that may sound like it's adding up to a lot. In a lot of cases, it's not adding up to much at all. And we really want to push that agenda within all those government departments to make it better for the next plan.
I only ask because when there are a whole range of strategies that departments need to action, I wonder which ones trump, especially when they're all at the same level of government, and why disability or accessibility isn't just part of the regular business of government strategy.
It's a great, yeah, I mean, we'd love to know the answer for that as well. It's not. Susan might have a better answer than I do. I think it's the departments have been very much a law unto themselves in the way they go about making those decisions about what trumps what. They are their own entities. Their own secretary will make their own calls about what the priorities are for them. But what helps a lot in that space is feedback from advocacy organisations, people with a disability that write to those departments about what matters, data that we can capture through you know, different statistical ABS and so forth. So a whole range of ways. We need to. That's the importance of that stuff, because that doesn't fall on deaf ears. It actually gets attention.
And the implementation plan will obviously give you a sense of what those priorities are, because that's what's committed to in the state plan. So have a look at that. Yeah.
Is that the end of our questions?
You'd like data?
I like data. Thank you for giving me
just for the
data.
Recording. And
you like data.
And
oh.
Data, and thank you for giving me the data that I wanted. Thank you.
So just for our recording, that was Anne Burgess saying that she loves data.
There's always one.
Well, look, thank you very much, everyone. That concludes the fourth session of our Advocacy Sector Conversations Forum for today. We're just going to have a bit of a wrap-up, but would you join me in thanking, from the Office for Disability, Michael Cromie and Felix Naber.
That concludes Session 4, Q&A with the Office for Disability.